Live from the Allstate Showcase Studio. This is the Steve Cochran Show on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
To go. 6'10", almost 6'11". Hi, how are you? Me? Oh, I'm fine, thanks.
How are you, Steve?
Fine, thanks. Sorry. I'm Steve, your radio friend, Dave. And now we dance.
Goodbye, baby. Yes, I'm going. Yes, I'm going.
Chuck Todd from Meet the Press, as always, he'll be on this morning. He does every Thursday with us. So we appreciate that. The speechwriter for President Obama was on, two months ago, promoting his book, David Lipp, one of the chief speechwriters. Funny guy. He'll be on this morning. He's actually in studio with us. And Dean Richards later, Aisha Tyler from, what was she on, The Talk? I think, and a million other things. Funny, she'll be on with us.
Wasn't she on, do I have the wrong person? Was she on Friends?
She was on Friends.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah. Friends, a very hip show with about three black people on it in 9 years, and she was one of them. We got Breakfast with the Blackhawk later, and Nick Schmaltz and Nick's mom, Lisa, will be on. Lisa Schmaltz.
I wonder if it's her first mom's trip.
Is it?
I wonder if she was. Well, Nick was around last year. I wonder if she was.
Last year was Dad's.
No, last year was Dad's, right? Yeah, yeah. So this would be her first one, I think.
I think you're right about that. And then David Hochberg later trying to fix your house worries. Let's do this top six at 6 at 6:12.
From the Steve Cochran Auditorium in the lovely Sunrise Hotel, it's time to get your kicks.
Get your kicks. Get your kicks. Get your kicks.
With the top 6 at 6. Sponsored by American Weathermakers, the home of the 60 Minute Man.
I'm going to go in reverse order in the stories that sort of I like. Okay? You mind? I'm not going to do these in order of importance.
It's called the Steve Cochran Show.
It's a fair point by you. Ed Burke, longtime Alderman Ed Burke from the 14th, is co-sponsoring a proposed ordinance at Southside Alderman Anthony Beale.
Anthony!
From the 9th. They want to fine pedestrians up to $500 for texting in a crosswalk.
I'm all for it.
I am too, man.
All for it.
Texting or using your cell phone in the crosswalk, you get ticketed and you can get fined up to $500.
Seems fair.
Love it.
You know that the commercial, it's a very powerful commercial. The slug line is it can wait.
Mm-hmm.
And it's about kids die while they're texting.
Right.
And people who die while they're texting. That's while they're driving. The fact that you are so busy. And so important that you can't cross the street without texting or on your phone. Give me a friggin' break.
Am I the only one, too, that if that happens to you and they seem like they're walking slower through the crosswalk, talking on the phone?
Oh, they're absolutely.
I feel like my head's going to explode when that happens.
Oh,
am
yeah.
I the only one?
It's such a violation of a civilized society. We all have to share the same space, right?
Right.
Yeah, one planet, one space. Everybody should follow at least some minimal rules. One is cross the street in a timely manner.
And the other one, just a sidebar. Yesterday, my wife was behind a woman at a stop sign or a stop light right in front of a school by us where, first of all, you're not allowed to be on your cell phone.
Yeah,
you're certainly not allowed to be texting. The woman was texting at the right in front of the school. The school crossing guard was motioning at her to stop. But she was too busy on her phone. The crossing guard had to go up and knock on the window. She looked up, told her to knock it off. As soon as the crossing guard walked away, she was at it again.
Wow.
I mean,
it's just get a ticket.
It
right
just
away.
Makes you crazy.
Wow. I hope somebody told the school, the principal. I mean, literally, you have to walk into the school and tell the principal and the adult.
Yeah. What's wrong with that?
Think of the children.
Amazing. Next. This is the other story I really wanted to get out there that's not that important in the context of the day, but I like it. The French are running out of butter. The country of the world's highest per capita rate of butter consumption. Have a huge problem on their hand, hashtag Buttergate. Dairy Federation statistics show France consumes, per person, 18 pounds of butter a year.
You know, I know you normally do.
18 pounds? That can't be
La
right.
Beurre.
That cannot be right.
You normally do the French accent with.
This is coming up later.
But like, okay, all right.
Yeah, that's coming up later.
Not now.
For sure.
All right.
It's more than twice the European average, three times the rate of consumption in the U.S. I can't believe we eat 6 pounds of butter a year. But I suppose it's butter used in food and all of that combined, right? It's
French people look good. They're not heavy.
Well, it's all the bicycling.
Yes.
What is the crux of this, though?
The slowing European dairy production and growing global demand. In other words, the French are selling too much of their butter instead of keeping it at home.
Boy.
Hashtag Buttergate. Next! President Trump, on a state visit to Beijing, he praised on President Xi yesterday and said the U.S. and China had the power to liberate the world from the North Korean menace. Remember when he was campaigning and he said China was horrible, we're not going to put up with it anymore? Mm-hmm. Yesterday he said, I don't blame China for taking advantage of the U.S. By the way, good news on President Trump. His bone spurs apparently have healed because he's headed for Vietnam.
Oh, yeah.
Next stop on a trip. Yeah. So congratulations to him. I know those are very painful, and they've kept him out of Vietnam since the draft back in the 60s. So thank God he's okay. Next, a lawsuit on behalf of female Cook County assistant public defenders alleging that authorities have not done enough to stop male detainees from exposing themselves and manipulating their case and threatening the attorneys in courtroom lockups in the county jail. The female attorneys proposed a class action lawsuit against their boss, the boss public defender, Amy Campanelli, as well as Sheriff Tom Dart. Other inaction has resulted in the sexual harassment only worsening over the last 2 years. The complaint continues. So Campanelli and Sheriff Dart have to now answer to that. Part of the answer seems to be not enough money in Cook County to pay for people to stop the inmates from touching themselves in front of females.
Did I read that the inmates get free pizza if they go a certain amount of time without touching themselves?
Is that true?
I think I read that in the Tribune. Yeah, in
good
the story.
Lord. Next. State Republicans are expected to unveil their tax legislation today. Most likely will diverge from the House plan. I said state Republicans, Senate Republicans. Divert from the House plan by eliminating the ability to deduct state and local taxes and by stopping short of fully repealing the estate tax. There's so much politics going on here and so little truth in policy. We'll take it up with Pat Brady and Chuck Todd and Eric Edelstein when we get into politics in more detail a little later. And then there's this. The Department of Justice has told Time Warner to sell its assets, which includes CNN, before making a blockbuster deal with AT&T. The Department of Justice is run by a guy who looks like Barney Fife. The Department of Justice is also overseen by the President of the United States. The President of the United States hates CNN. Your conspiracy theory here.
Are you connecting dots?
I am. I love dot to dot. It's 6:18. Mary's here with you. Traffic. And Nick will join us in a couple of minutes to talk about some show business and an amazing thing that's happening because of the Kevin Spacey debacle and the crimes he's apparently committed. But first at 6:18, it's traffic, and I got to tell you, Mayor, that desktop weather indoor weather station would be great for you, but you can't win because you work here.
Oh, I'm bummed.
American Weathermakers Heating and Cooling, the 60-Minute Man, would like the sixth caller to have one now at 312-981-7200. What are the cars doing?
What to see, what's out at the show, I need to know the place and when. But there's one guy on Kian's Cochran Show. And what he says will make us stay or go. He is Nick at Night, DiGiulio. He knows what shows are good, what's stinking. He's the only one who's in the know. I need to know what Nick is thinking.
6:24.
I need to know.
Nick joins us now. The career of Kevin Spacey appears to be over without a trial because he's not denying any of the hideous charges that have been brought up against him. He's essentially disappeared. And something amazing has happened. Now, this doesn't change the world, but in Hollywood terms, this is such an example to tell you that Hollywood is done with Kevin Spacey, a guy who was one of the A-list actors, movers and shakers, one of the most powerful guys in Hollywood. I might argue one of the top 10 most powerful actors in Hollywood. And probably nobody would argue with me until 2 weeks ago. and now he's essentially done. He and Harvey Weinstein, pariahs, both of them. Tell everybody what Ridley Scott's doing.
It's insane. This is unprecedented. All the Money in the World is about J. Paul Getty. It's a film that's due to come out December 22nd. And Kevin Spacey is in it and plays J. Paul Getty. But Ridley Scott decided to sever all ties with him. They are reshooting all of the J. Paul Getty scenes, replacing Kevin Spacey with Christopher Plummer. This has never been done before, especially in this kind of time frame. Ridley Scott says he'll have the movie done and ready to go by December 22nd. And, you know, to have this kind of replacement, I mean, that's, you know, that signals the absolute end of Kevin Spacey's career. And the weird thing is that they released the trailer already with Kevin Spacey
right.
in it,
right.
which I've seen. And they're going to pull all of those trailers probably from online and everything just, you know, to basically say that it never existed. But I've never seen anything like this. And, you know, I can't imagine the kind of pressure that they're going to be under to try and get these reshoots done in time for the December 22nd release. I mean,
you could make the argument that they had to, that the movie would have died and they would have had a huge problem on their hands. However, the fact that they're doing it, the production company deserves credit. All the actors who are willing to change whatever their schedules are deserve credit. The crews that have to work this, you know, it doesn't occur in a vacuum. There's a lot of things you have to move to make this happen. But again, the larger signal here is how much did Hollywood hate Kevin Spacey? We all knew the stories behind the scene if you had any connection at all. I'd heard him for years. You'd heard him for years. A bad guy, a tough guy to deal with. There was no denying he was a great actor. But this is a collective, thank God he's gone, like I've never seen.
Yeah, it's incredible. It really is. I have to see, you know, all these horrible things that he's been accused of, he's not denying, and he's now going to, you know, he's at some plush rehab facility in Phoenix where they can do yoga by the pool, and that's supposed to be his rehab of what's happening. But, you know, and it also, you just, you know, on a very selfish level, my favorite movie of the year has now been tainted. My favorite movie of the year is Baby Driver.
Yeah, and he's great in it. He's great in everything. How about House of Cards? Done.
Yeah, done. Netflix completely severed ties with him like 2 days after the accusations.
Right.
I've never seen anything like it. And really, I know that, you know, people are going to be keeping an eye. You know, people who cover the Hollywood scene and the entertainment scene are really going to be keeping an eye on these reshoots and how they go. And if Ridley Scott pulls this off, you know, a month, the movie's going to come out in a month and he's got to reshoot a major character every single scene. Bring back the locations, bring back the actors. Make sure the continuity is okay. But this is a massive undertaking.
It's a big deal.
And you know
who I would be, you know, and you know these conversations are going on. Every auteur, every artistic director who wanted to take his sweet time to make a movie, when he pulls this off, and I think he will, they're going to have to go through meetings now with guys who don't direct. Producers are going, hey, Ridley Scott did it in 6 weeks. What's your problem?
Exactly.
So there you go.
Yeah, crazy situation.
All right, what else is happening?
Well, big weekend for movies. The remake of Murder on the Orient Express is coming out.
Do we need that?
I don't think so, because the 1974 version that Sidney Lumet directed is fantastic. And the movie has been, the story has been told on three different occasions. It was told as a TV miniseries. It was told, they did a version of it in 2001 that they actually modernized it, where it took place now. But, you know, it's got an unbelievable cast. Kenneth Branagh is in it, and he directed it. But Johnny Depp, Daisy Ridley, Michelle Pfeiffer, Judy Dench, Penelope Cruz, Josh Gad, Willem Dafoe. It's an incredible cast. I just don't, you know, I know the story, so I know the ending.
Right.
You know,
right.
This is a big whodunit. I know whodunit. So I don't know.
Yeah, and it's not a true life-to-movie sort of situation like I assume Lady Bird is.
Lady Bird is written and directed by actress Greta Gerwig, who is a really terrific actress and a good writer. She's directing this, and it's a pretty autobiographical thing about a teenage girl trying to become her own, but while living with her parents who want her to do different things than she does.
I thought this was one of these based on a true story things. No.
No, well, and it's based on her life.
Okay, got it, got it.
It's autobiographical, but it's not like a famous story of any kind.
It's the great
Saoirse Ronan, who is just such a wonderful young actress. Lucas Hedges is in this. And here's the lovely Chicago connection. The people who play her parents are the fantastic Laurie Metcalf and the great Tracy Letts.
Oh, good, good.
And, yeah, it's a low-budget movie, and I've heard nothing but great things about it.
What about Last Flag Flying?
Last Flag Flying is Richard Linklater's latest movie with Steve Carell, Bryan Cranston, and Lawrence Fishburne. They play three Vietnam vets from years back who reunite to go pick up Steve Carell's son's body and have it buried. They didn't want it buried at Arlington, so they're bringing it home.
What do you hear about Steve Carell pulling off a serious role?
I hear everything about this movie I hear is great. And here's the crazy thing about this, Steve. You remember The Last Detail with Jack Nicholson?
Yeah, of course.
This is a sequel. This is a sequel.
Oh, I didn't know
that. With Bryan Cranston is playing the Nicholson role. Steve Carell is playing the Randy Quaid role. Mm-hmm. And Lawrence Fishburne is playing the other role. They're kind of keeping this under, they haven't really talked about it, but they're saying it's like a spiritual sequel to The Last Detail. But it's the same characters from The Last Detail, modern times, reuniting to help bring Steve Carell's son's body back. I hear nothing but great things about it. And it's Richard Linklater. I mean, he's amazing.
He's kind of good.
Yeah.
By the way, I don't know if you heard the good news before you came on, but President Trump's headed for Vietnam, so apparently the bone spurs have healed. Because, it kept him out of Vietnam previously.
That's right. I forgot about that. That's right. Good for him.
And finally, the cinematic Shakespearean classic Daddy's Home 2.
Daddy's Home 2, which is the sequel to the smash hit from a couple of years ago, where Mark Wahlberg and Will Ferrell play ex-husbands, slash husbands who are trying to raise the kids between the two of them. And they want to do a family Christmas together. For everybody together. But unfortunately, their respective fathers also come to town. The crazy macho Mel Gibson, who is Mark Wahlberg's father, and the lovely, kiss me on the mouth and hug my son, John Lithgow, plays Will Ferrell's father. And then
I love John Lithgow. John Lithgow is just tremendous.
Yeah. Yeah. He's just the best. And he's had an amazing year. He won the Emmy for playing Winston Churchill on The Crown. And
Churchill, the Daddy's Home too. Tell me that's not range.
Yeah, that is range. It's range. He was also in a really great movie called Beatrice at Dinner that was sadly overlooked this past summer, featuring Salma Hayek's best performance, and he was tremendous in that movie. So he's still got it, man.
Get it in a double feature. It's My Dinner with Andre and Beatrice at Dinner. Those are both, you should see them back to back. Sandberg.
Pat and I saw Daddy's Home, accidentally, and it is one of the best movies. It is so funny. So we're really looking forward to this.
So you're Daddy's all excited Home about Daddy's Home too?
We are.
So is Mark Wahlberg's agent.
It was, it's kind of like Stepbrothers, dumb funny, but it was really funny. I'm embarrassed to recommend it to people, but if you really want to laugh.
Apparently there are no Jews in the movie because Mel Gibson plays one of the dads.
Oh, man.
Has he been fully rehabilitated?
In
Hollywood terms, I mean,
he got nominated for an Oscar last year for directing Hacksaw Ridge.
Which was a great movie.
I guess all is forgiven.
John Cena is really funny, and he's in the movie as well. So listen, you could do worse than spending 90 minutes in that thing.
I agree with Mary. I laughed more than I wanted to at the first day.
Right.
This is a really stupid movie, but I laughed more than I wanted to.
Your next movie is what?
This Tuesday, Planes, Trains, and Automobiles, the Thanksgiving classic, John Hughes, great John Candy, the great Steve Martin, a classic on the big screen, $15 to get in. Parking and popcorn are free, and get there early, have some dinner. Movie starts at 8. I'll introduce it. We'll talk about it afterwards. And this one was demanded by my film club. They were like, come on, it's Thanksgiving.
It's perfect.
So we're going to laugh and have a great time. And it's this Tuesday night.
Dave, I've been trying to talk Dave into recreating our famous scene from the Kathy and Judy convention. Those aren't pillows, Dave won't do it.
Yeah. No?
No.
I think that ship has sailed.
You nibbled on my ear once, it'll never happen
that
again.
That was the only time that's ever happening.
All right, buddy. Be well.
Take care.
Chuck Todd coming up. Big story before that. Next, Andrea's back tomorrow, and Vic's in for Andrea next on 720 WGN.
This is the Steve Cochran Show.
I continue to believe Mr. Trump will not be president. And the reason is because I have a lot of faith in the American people.
Donald Trump cannot win a choice election. Without college-educated white voters, Donald Trump can't win.
Because if Donald Trump can't win over the overwhelming majority of members of his own party, he just can't get the votes he needs to win the election.
Can Donald Trump win a general election?
My view is no, but we'll see.
You lined up everyone that was wrong 1 year ago today. Oh, you'd have a really long line. And you know what? I'd be in it. I'd be in it. Chuck Todd joins us. Meet the Press, MTP Daily Podcast, 1947. You ought to see it, or listen to it, I should say. And you ought to see some of the cool anniversary stuff that the MTP crew is doing here on the 70th anniversary of Meet the Press. Good morning, Chuck.
Good morning, Steve. Hey, I'd be in the line, too.
Yeah, we'll both be in the line.
Let's not pretend. No, trust me.
All right, so before we get to politics, if somebody made a prop bet in the beginning of the year, before this NFL season started, that the Bears would be favorite over the Packers, you'd make a lot of money. And look at this.
Yeah.
Bears-Packers week, and the Bears are Bears are favorite.
Here's the thing. You know what I'm more excited about? I'm glad it's Miami-Notre Dame week. Because I'll be honest, I watched that Packer game in Detroit, and that's what I'm like all fired up. I watched that Packer game on Monday night. And the reality is setting in. They're 4-4. I'm smelling 6-10.
Yeah. Probably. Yeah, and so probably happy to get there.
And honestly, this is one of the two new wins I'm actually counting on Green Bay to have.
I feel like this kid that's the backup. Who's playing now?
Quarterback? Hunley. Brett Hunley.
Yeah, he feels like Zeke Bretkowski following Bart Starr to me.
Oh, I know. You know, here's the thing. I actually, I watched this kid in college. He's got a lot of talent. I don't know. I'm not sure does the coach not trust Hunley to do things and he's keeping him under wraps, or is Hunley really that far behind in the playbook? It has been frustrating watching them. But look, the real problem is they have no running back. They have no running game. And when you have a young quarterback and you don't have anybody to get 2 yards, forget it.
Tough.
Yeah. Now they have no tight end and they have no offensive line either.
Yeah.
So
other than that, things are good.
Yeah, things are okay.
Everything's great. Clay Matthews is healthy. Yeah.
Yeah, got that going. Clay may bring back the rest of his family just to fill out some jerseys.
Exactly.
All right, so here we are. 1 year ago this morning, we woke up to Donald Trump as president. And I guess what I'd say is we know who he is. We know he's 71 years old. And maybe we all collectively need to stop freaking out every time he says something inappropriate, does something inappropriate, or doesn't appear to be ready for the job. I'm not advocating lower the standards. I'm just saying adjust your reality.
Look, I think there's some of that. I think, though, that's such a fine line of when do you adjust? I agree on adjusting reality. I think some of my colleagues, you can't take the outrage meter. You know, we took it to 10. It's like it doesn't go to 11 and 12, right? Mm-hmm. And Spinal Tap taught us that, right? Mm-hmm. You know, there's just only so much you go. So I do think you have to be we do need to be more, we collectively, a bit more selective in it. But I have to tell you, look, it may have been a delayed reaction, but what we saw this election night, a year later, on Tuesday night, and the reaction or the where basically suburbia repelled, against all things having to do with Donald Trump. That's exactly what a lot of us thought was going to happen in the suburbs in 2016. But the issue that we underestimated was the loathing that was out there for Hillary Clinton.
Yep.
I mean, the fact of the matter is, it's possible we may look back in 10 years and 2016 looks like an accident. It doesn't look like anything other than a black swan election where the swan is named Hillary Clinton, that it was an accident, that her profile, her personal issue, whatever it is, whatever voters thought of her, it was the reason why he won. Especially if we end up in 17 being a Democratic year, if 18 is a Democratic year, and if he doesn't win re-election, that's what history will then judge 2016.
We're
still finding out.
What have the Democrats learned? This is the amazing thing to me. The Republicans are just one member short of a clown car, and the Democrats have done nothing to take advantage of that in Congress. And obviously the president's problems are what we're discussing here. And the Democrats have no message. They have no leadership. No. What do they plan to do?
Well, look, I think they've learned tactically to do things better. They're at least recruiting candidates. I mean, if you look at what happened in the House of Delegates in the state legislative races in Virginia, you know, they won a bunch of races. Ironically, the last time it was up, they didn't have candidates in like half the seats. Mm-hmm. So tactically, the Democrats are making progress on that front. But just because Ralph Northam won by 9 points instead of one or two or like, doesn't mean he had a message. It doesn't mean Democrats look like they know how to have an answer on immigration. I mean, they're still caught in a trap where they're the party of open borders, which, wait a minute, in the middle of the electorate, they're not fully there either. They, you know, they want a compassionate immigration policy that has some border security, right? You know, so they still have a lot of work to do. That said, when you're out of power, sometimes you don't need a message. Did the Republicans have a message beyond not Obama and not Obamacare in 2010?
No.
In a midterm election, there's a reminder, and that's what, look, the fact of the matter is Gillespie dictated the terms of the campaign in the last 3 weeks, and Northam still swamped him. You know, normally in a campaign that the two of them engaged in, and you look who's more defensive, all this stuff, you know, like I said, you could have made an argument Gillespie won the campaign but lost the election. But sometimes it doesn't matter. I mean, turnout, it didn't just surge. It was a tsunami that showed up. You had presidential level turnout in Virginia. Frankly, there were spots that had a higher turnout than 2016.
Right.
That is something, that is an energy that, you know, you don't need a message. People went into that voting booth and said, oh, I'm voting straight Democratic, it looked like, in some points, because it was just that kind of ousting here in the Old Dominion.
And we got to see what happens with the primary season coming up as well, because 2018 primaries will determine who your candidates are you vote for next November, and we'll be harping about it here. Before I let you go, math doesn't lie. The tax bill, any chance of getting it out of the House, into the Senate, out of the Senate to a vote? Where are we going to go with this?
Well, what's it going to look like? I think something's going to come out, but I think this thing dramatically changes. Every suburban Republican member of Congress woke up Wednesday morning either thinking about two things. Should they retire and not run for reelection? And if they run, oh, my God, what are they going to do with this tax bill? And I think because this tax bill targets the upper middle class, the very constituencies, these basically 25 most vulnerable Republican members reside in. And they're the ones that are probably benefiting the least from this tax bill. I think it's going to make creating the tax bill a mess. You know what Donald Trump should do? He pledged $1.5 trillion over the next 10 years. Divide that up and just give an equal amount of money to every family that makes less than $200,000 a year and call it a day.
Yep.
I mean, just do an $2,000 rebate is basically what it would be, I think, or something like that. Just do that.
It totally
would
agree.
Probably accomplish more. And frankly, the president would love that. It would at least guarantee somebody got cash.
Everybody gets a check.
What George W. Bush did, everybody got a check.
Yeah.
Remember? Everybody got a check.
No, I completely agree. Meet the Press, MTP Daily, and, of course, 1947, the podcast. Is there a book coming out to celebrate your anniversary on the show or anything?
We have an e-book that was sort of an updated version of our a great sort of history of Meet the Press book that came out during the 50th, and we've updated it every 5 years.
All right. Well, so I think you need something for this year for Christmas.
I hear you. You know, I don't know. Some book publishers said we'll do the book at 75. You know, sometimes the five and the zero, you never know.
Who knows where we'll be in 5 years.
The more marketable number. That's what I say.
By the way, we didn't have time to talk about this, but I'm just glad the president's finally going to make it to Vietnam. All right, Chuck, I'll see you later.
Drops the mic. Goodbye.
This is the Steve Cochran Show.
So in love.
I know you didn't do this just to win an election. I know you didn't do it for me. You did it because you understand the enormity of the task that lies ahead.
But my main message is to the parents of Trayvon Martin. You know, if I had a son, he'd look like Trayvon.
Black, white, Latino, Asian, Native American, young, old, gay, straight, men, women, folks with disabilities, all pledging allegiance under the same proud flag.
They had their entire lives ahead of them. Birthdays, graduations, weddings, kids of their own. So our hearts are broken today.
Moments that can change things, moments that can move you. And David Litt is an American speechwriter of great note because he worked for President Obama. Now, I'll be honest with you, he wrote the funny stuff. But certainly around one of the great speech makers of all time. You know, based on that introduction, I have to ask you the serious question. First, welcome back to the show, by the way.
Thank you.
And congratulations on the book. I'll get you the title in just a second. He appeared to be one of the great ad-libbers of all time. Is there any way to quantify a percentage of how much he rolled with stuff and ad-libbed in the moment?
It really depended. I don't know percentage-wise. What was interesting was President Obama didn't ad-lib as much as some other politicians. So
really?
Joe Biden, you may not be surprised to learn, ad-libbed all the time. Bill Clinton was pretty famous for, you know, he would take a paragraph from the end of his speech that he had committed to memory, stick it in the middle, and then kind of work it around and edit it on the fly. President Obama didn't ad-lib that often, but when he did, he would kind of pause for a second, and you could tell he was thinking, like, do I want to do this? Yeah, I'm going to do it. And almost always that would be the part of the speech that, you know, a friend or a family member would say, like, hey, did you write that line? And I'd be like, well, I worked on the speech.
Right.
You know, kind of duck the question
a little bit.
So he was very, you know, he's a writer. And he's just precise with language in that way.
I think I talked to you about this before, and the book is called Thanks, Obama, My Hope He Changed the White House Years. It's a very funny book, and it's a cool book, too, because it takes you behind the scenes in the process. Your new gig, of course, at Funny or Die is office in Washington, where apparently you're the boss. Are you a good guy to work for?
Well, there's only two of us, and we're sort of equal partners in the Washington office, so I don't know yet. We'll see.
Is Will Ferrell really active in the site?
It's not like he's dropping by the office every time, but you know what's cool about it is it can sort of be an expression of what he wants to do that isn't going to be a movie.
Sure.
But then at the same time, we work with all sorts of other people. So one of the reasons that I started with Funny or Die was that they were the ones who brought in Zach Galifianakis to do Between Two Ferns with President Obama.
So funny.
Which was
so
great.
Funny.
And in the book, I make this clear, I thought it was a terrible idea.
Oh, you did?
I was like, this isn't going to be funny. No one's going to watch it. I was 100% wrong, as we all know. And so after I left the White House, I was like, you know, there's other ways that we can do stuff with comedy that makes a difference. And Funny or Die wanted to do that. And so they needed someone to kind of translate between Hollywood and D.C., so I do a lot of that.
So do you have to go out and see Daddy's Home 2 immediately this weekend, or you're in trouble?
Yeah, that's right. I'm going to have to plead the fifth if I haven't seen it.
In the book, you talk about your, I think, 5 years? 5 years in the White House?
Just about,
right?
Yeah.
And Valerie Jarrett from here found you, discovered you, if you will. And you had how old are you when you got the gig?
I was 24 when I started writing.
It's unbelievable. Had you ever been to the White House on a tour or anything prior to that?
You know, I had been on one tour. And I got left off the security list, so I was stuck out for like 3 hours trying to. So mostly I was happy to just be indoors because this was one of the holiday tours. I had done some volunteering for the DNC, and they had invited me to the White House, you know, just along with 17,000 of my closest friends, to just walk through the building. And I was huddled outside while they fixed something on the,
freezing.
Yeah, freezing. So by the time I was in there, I was just so glad to not be outside. I was like, A, this is amazing, it's the White House, and B, you know, indoor heating, this is great.
Right, so. Blue room, I'm blue. So the first time you really saw the goods was after you were hired.
Yeah, I mean, the first time I was in the West Wing was to interview with Valerie, which was terrifying. I mean, I was walking through there being like, they're letting me in the West Wing, and B, I have to do a job interview.
Yeah.
And she was very nice, I will say. You know, I was like, how am I going to open my mouth and say a sentence?
Well, you probably weren't the first nervous person in the West Wing. Imagine how nervous they are now.
Well, that's true.
The book details some of the great moments and some of the moment misses and some of the funny moments and the process, as they said, and all of that, and the story of your years at the White House. Again, it's My Hope He Changed the Years. Thanks, Obama, My Hope He Changed the Years. Out and available everywhere. Get two copies. You're careless, you'll lose the first one. But what joke did you write that he dropped that still makes you crazy?
Well, you know, there were a few. There was one where this wasn't my joke, actually, but I kind of was responsible for going over the jokes in the Oval. So another speechwriter wrote a joke that needed kind of a Valley Girl accent to work. And it was about, you know, the president spending more time in Congress and learning that it was all like one big high school. And President Obama sort of gave me a look like, what do you mean by that? And I said, well, you need to say it like, well.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, I was like, well, I was talking to Mitch, who was talking to Lindsay, who was talking to John, and they were all, like, talking. And so I said this to the president in the Oval Office, and then I realized I had just said this to the president in the Oval Office. And he gave me a look and was like, well, that would be funny if a comedian did it. And I was like, okay, fair point. Like, that is, that I did not bring that one up again.
Right. But so you're okay after it was explained to you. But there had to be at least one joke where you go, this is gold, Jerry, and he didn't do it.
there were a few that I liked, but I will say one of the things to be, I think, a successful speechwriter is you need to be okay saying, I may love this, but if the person who's in charge of it doesn't like it, that's not my choice. It's not my words. I mean, there was I had a joke in 2014, I think, about D.C. decriminalizing marijuana. And the joke was that Rand Paul just delivered a 13-hour filibuster on whether or not the Taco Bell is still open.
See, there you go.
Which I thought was really funny.
Right.
I would say that joke lands about 30% of the time when I tell it. So I'm glad that we were in the 30% right now.
Right, and there's even old white guys in a room that got it. Yeah.
But President Obama was like, I don't feel that one. You know, I don't really get that one. So I think I maybe tried to explain it and kind of got that look and was like, you know what? There's plenty of other good jokes here. So let's move on. And I'm fine with that.
You look back at the – do you miss the day-to-day there?
I miss parts of the day-to-day a lot. I mean, what I really miss is – every time President Obama, I mean, you saw this from the video in Chicago yesterday when he was doing jury duty.
Yeah.
He walks into a room, and for the people in that room, that's one of the most special moments of their lives.
Oh, they tell that story forever.
Forever.
Yeah.
And I got to be a tiny, tiny part of helping make those stories happen.
That's cool.
And that was really cool.
Yeah.
You know, there's stuff I don't miss. I don't miss the pressure. I don't miss feeling like if I screw up at my job in some way, I'm letting my country down. That, you know, that was a special feeling to feel responsible like that, but it was also really hard. So, you know, there's definitely nice things about being out of the White House, but there's things I miss.
It's David Litt, again, a fine graduate of Yale University. He'd be the only one in the room, by the way, that graduated from Yale.
No, I was going to go there. I just couldn't get in.
You know, they don't even allow you in New Haven. And thanks, Obama. My hope you change your White House. Here's is the book. As you look back on that time, if you hadn't gotten that gig, what path would you have been on by now?
You know, I have no idea. I was thinking about coming to Chicago to work on the reelect when I got the speechwriting job in the White House, so I might have been doing politics in some other
way. So you're a committed follower. You believed in all that.
I absolutely did. You know, I started when I was in high school and college. I did a lot of comedy stuff, so yeah, maybe I would have you know, taken the plunge and gone to New York or L.A., and I'd be...
Listen, dude, at your age, you can still do it.
Yeah, exactly. So, we'll, you know, who knows?
You interested in a morning talk show?
Yeah, exactly. Who knows how long this will last?
Yeah, that's. I hear they're pretty popular. So.
Before we run out of time, 2011, it's the correspondence dinner, and he was great at those. Great. And the night before, we don't know that on his mind has to be the fact that in a few hours, he's hoping that our guys are going to get bin Laden. He can't tell anybody. He can't talk about it. There's less than a dozen people in the world that are really in on the full scope of the plan. You know he's going out there to be funny and to do his thing. He nailed it. But that night, Donald Trump is in the audience, and he destroyed Trump. And every time they did a cutaway, I'm sure you've watched it, to Trump, he looks like he's more and more angry. Do you believe the theory that Donald Trump on that night decided, whatever I do for the rest of my life, I will get Barack Obama?
Well, I do think that level of personal resentment, I mean, it is really strange that Donald Trump does not seem to believe in that much other than he believes in Donald Trump, and he really hates Barack Obama.
Those are the two things.
Yeah, and Rosie O'Donnell. Like, that's another, you know, those three things are kind of his platform.
Yeah.
But I also think that, you know, the idea that he ran for president because he got roasted by President Obama, I actually think it's the opposite. I think he was jealous. I think there, because all Donald Trump has ever wanted is for people in Hollywood and Washington and New York to love him.
Yep.
And those were the people in that room. And I think he saw the president was like, oh, if I can be the guy behind the podium, you know, they'll love me. Mm-hmm. And then he discovers you also have to be a good president for that to happen. And so I think he's running into that trouble right now.
It's a very funny book, very entertaining, very interesting book as well. I hate to describe your book as interesting, but frankly, it is. thanks, Obama. My hope you change your White House here is David Litt. Again, get two copies. Get three. Hey, it's the holiday season. Get three and share it with your friends. And make sure you check out Funny or Die as well. It's a terrific website. David, I love having you on. You're welcome anytime.
Thanks so much. It's good
to
be here.
Good to see you. Come back with Eric Edelstein and Pat Brady and talk about the mess that is Washington, Springfield, Chicago, and beyond on 720 WGN News Mary. And hi to Eric Edelstein and Pat Brady. Pat, your company's name?
Next Generation Strategies.
How about you, Eric?
AL Media.
Nice to see both of you. On Tuesday, the election results were pretty dramatic, even though we knew the outcome of the Jersey race. The Virginia race and the margin of victory when polls were closing late seemed to turn the tide. So what do the Democrats do with this, Eric?
Well, we'll blow it. No, I'm just kidding. You know, elections are sometimes about the individual, sometimes they're about the atmosphere. There's no question the results that you saw across the country were about the atmosphere. I think a clear, not just rebuke to Trump, but I think, you know, this notion of Democrats and lots of people who don't necessarily, even some Republicans who don't like the direction of the country, feeling like they had to do something.
Yeah.
Came out and voted, and the turnout numbers were
huge,
extraordinary, and you know that's a good sign. For regardless of who you're for or who you're not, you want more people to participate, and particularly when things are negative and there's this polarization, what you don't want is people to go the other way and say the system's rigged, it doesn't work, I don't care, my vote doesn't matter, I'm going to go home. You saw people on Tuesday coming out and saying this is our country, my vote matters, and I'm gonna have my voice heard.
Pat, based on what happened on Tuesday, if you're advising a Republican candidate for 2018 on any level, do you advise them to follow Trump and reference Trump or stay away from Trump?
And that was the problem in Virginia, because Ed Gillespie kind of had to do the tightrope on both. And Virginia's a little bit like Illinois. You have the northern two or three counties get 25% of the vote that where Trump was toxic, and then the rest of the state further south in the state where Trump was popular. So he had to do both things. He had to not get Trump in this for him. He did things that people like me don't like say the Confederate monuments are okay, but when he got north, he had to stay as far away from Trump as he could. But to me, the disturbing statistic for us coming, Republicans coming out of there, is he lost, Ed Gillespie lost college-educated women by 16 points, which is more than Trump lost them by, which is a key demographic for us going forward. And that eastern part of the state, which is more of a moderate Republican part of the state, he did not do very well.
And I think the other thing that's been reported a little bit is they're close to taking over that chamber, the lower chamber in the Virginia House of Delegates, and nobody thought that was possible going into Election Day. And I think what happens
did
is—
Did you see the stat, though, that of the 14 that won, 10 of them were women?
Yeah.
Which is a good development for everybody.
Yeah, and I think what you're going to see now is increased energy on the Democratic side, more candidates want to run. I think you'll see more Republican retirements, because you'll see a lot of members who say, I don't want to go through this.
You're also seeing, for the last 8 years, we've beat the Republicans have beaten the Democrats pretty badly on fundraising at that level.
Yeah.
Our fundraising is way behind what it was.
Right.
And the Democrats' fundraising is really good right now.
I mean, I'll give you one example. Virginia 10, which is northern suburbs, Loudoun County, northern Virginia, which you're talking about. Barbara Comstock's Republican member of Congress, who is a tough campaigner, always wins tough re-elections. Her district was lost by, I think, 20 points to the Republican. And so there's a lot of people saying she might retire at this point. And I think we'll see a lot of fallout from what happened Tuesday.
And if you're hearing all of this and agree with it, and you're saying what I'm saying is, well, give the Democrats the ball because they don't know what they're going to do with it. That's the subpart two of the problem. What do you do if the Democrats take over next year? We're not going to get to 2018, though. We're going to come back and we're going to talk about 1 year of President Donald Trump, the investigation, all things from that, his trip. Let's come back, do the big story first before any of that. More with Eric Edelstein and Pat Brady. This is 720 WGN.
The Steve Cochran Show.
I never ran for office, and here I am, but I never ran. So I wasn't very experienced. And after I had won, everybody was calling me from all over the world. I never knew we had so many countries. Nobody knew that healthcare could be so complicated. Puerto Rico is so thankful for the great job that we're doing. And it's the most difficult job because it's on the island. It's on an island in the middle of the ocean.
Lincoln signed the law that built the first transcontinental railroad. Most people don't even know he was a Republican, right? Does anyone know?
Who the hell knows?
That's just... Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to 1 year. Eric Edelstein and Pat Brady are here. You know the thing about a human life and a dog's life, 7 years to one? I believe Trump time is 8 years. 8 years. It feels like 8 years or 8 minutes, depending on the issue. The new timing. 1 year of Donald Trump as of this morning.
Hey, it's all going according to plan. He's got us right where
Steve, can I bring up something really important?
Yeah, of course.
I try not to watch a lot of his live speeches. It's just not good for the digestive system.
Yeah.
But I was watching the election returns Tuesday night on and then his speech in South Korea came up. What is going on with his hair? Can I just
I have talked to professionals about this.
Yeah.
It's a three-way comb over.
Okay.
You know, the one comb over where you grow the other side long and then you flop it over the top. This is a three-way comb over where it's long on one side and long in the back, so it's a two-layered deal. And that's why he uses so
like
much
one of those
hairspray.
Boxes you put together when you're moving?
Yeah. Exactly. Like that? Exactly.
It's not just one long hair.
It's long in the back and long in the side, and he flops it over two different ways and hairsprays the heck out of it. The person I feel most for about that is Melania, because she has to have seen that, unhairsprayed. What could he look like with a hair long in the back and long in the side?
Does he have to take all his aerosols out when he gets on Air Force One?
He's got a guy.
Think they just
his bagman.
They
his
just
bagman
wave him through.
He's got a guy. You remember guys have the body man for a politician has the chapstick or whatever. There's an Aquanet guy. Yeah, there's an Aquanet guy for the president. There has to be. By the way, have you seen the budget numbers? This whole tax cut, we'd be offended by that. Or affected by that. Trump spends over $1.6 million a year in hairspray. I don't know if you know that.
Well, they stuck in a clause, so that's a write-off for him.
Yeah, well, I don't make stuff up. Before we get to the Washington stuff, I want to remind everybody the Lincoln Forum's next event is coming up next week, right?
Well, we had to push that date.
Oh, you pushed it back?
Yeah, well, Chris Kennedy had a conflict, and rightfully so. He's going
to prom?
Exactly. Adult prom.
Yeah.
No, there's actually a candidate forum at Governor State. It's going to be a big deal together. So all the candidates are going to be there. But we're going to get a rescheduled date in December or January. So we'll re-announce that.
All right.
In January, we're going to roll out the schedule, too, and we're going to start doing some debate formats where we get both sides in to talk about the issues, the tax issues, all the big issues. So it's going on well, though. Thank you.
And LincolnForum.org?
LincolnForum.org. Thank you.
Springfield, update me. Because, honestly, there's not a lot going on legislatively. There's some interesting things that have happened. Rauner's gotten a couple of things done. But everybody seems to be talking about the sexual harassment issue there as well.
That is the discussion. I was down there this week, and that's all anybody is discussing. The governor did have a win on the they did not override his veto of the right to work law. So that was a big win for him on his agenda. But the buzz down there and the talk down there is all on the sexual harassment. In fact, yesterday, I think both the House and the Senate members had their first sexual harassment training at 3:00.
Well, the thing I've said, and allow me to restate it for all the men in the room that believe the same way I do, because I know you do, sensitivity training is not going to help somebody who believes in grabbing them by the pee or anything else related to the Harvey Weinstein world that we live in. That's a character flaw and a wiring problem, and it's criminal. So sensitivity is important, but isn't the bigger problem in Springfield not having an IG?
And they fixed that. They appointed a former assistant U.S. attorney, Julia Porter. There's 27 pending complaints, not cases, complaints, that she's going to review and figure out what to do with them. They will get that spot filled, which hadn't been filled for 3 or 4 years. That IG position, that whole commission, was set up after Blagojevich to watch what goes on in Springfield. And
an HR department in a normal place.
It's all their faults. They didn't fill that spot. The thing I think, though, when you talk about the people that are going to be predators are going to be predators. I thought Leader Durkin had the best idea is to set up a hotline. So there's an immediate place where people can go for their complaints to be aired, not having to go to an office and sit and make a complaint. And that's what a lot of corporations do to prevent fraud. They have hotlines where people have a place that they can reach out to anonymously or not, but at least they have a place to go right away. I think that's a good idea. And there's legislation that's going to has passed or will pass that's going to address this. So they're taking steps to avoid it, but there's a different vibe down there, that's for sure.
You were going to say?
Well, no, I just obviously it's a huge problem in Springfield, but it's hardly isolated there. We're seeing it all over the place. And, you know, just there's an irony, and maybe I'm not insightful enough to draw all the conclusions, but the irony that the guy who's the president is an acknowledged sexual predator in many ways, and yet we're in this moment now where this behavior is no longer tolerated, and yet we put this guy in the way. It's sort of like a head spinning.
Yeah, no, it is. It's another one of those Twilight Zone things.
Yeah,
because
bizarro world.
Yeah, because he said it in his own words.
In his own words.
Yeah, yeah. So it's not like we're making stuff up. I'm just happy that he's finally making it to Vietnam. I mentioned this earlier in the show. Apparently, the bone spurs have healed. So now he's his next stop is Vietnam. He's left China. I believe you told me this 2 years ago that his draft dodge would be an issue eventually.
And here's the big thing with his draft dodge: Vietnam, bad war, whatever you want to call it. But the kids that fought that war mm-hmm. were minorities of color. And the elites like Trump. And,
well, that's not that. I agree. But the white guys that fought the war were there too. You're not shortchanging them. You're just
saying
they haven't been recognized for their contribution.
Exactly. Well, that's a separate. But the point is, there were a lot of poor kids, minority kids that got sucked up over there that didn't want to go. And were over there. And a lot of them were killed when the people like Donald Trump and the people of wealth and means were getting out because he had a bone spur. If you look at the pictures of him at that time, he was a pretty good athlete in pretty good shape. Mm-hmm. And he got out of the war. And the fundamental unfairness of that war and the way that these kids were treated, it's come to the front again because of the Burns documentary. But to me, it's so offensive. And then particularly for him to make the statements he did about Senator McCain, who was a hero, that you're not a hero because you got captured. Oh, by the way, I didn't go because I had a bone spur.
Well, right. And also Gold Star families, the insensitivity to Gold Star families who've literally lost a loved one there. I mean, it's right. ridiculous.
Don't get me wrong. I'm not anyway diminishing the role of the white folks. Yeah. But the fact that this group of poor people were picked up and sent out. A friend of mine, Bill Cook, who was a highly decorated Vietnam veteran, he grew up poor in a Hispanic neighborhood, and all his friends were getting drafted. And I was up in his house once. He had all these Bronze Star, all these awards. And I go, "Why? What's this all about?" He goes, "I got so angry that all my Mexican friends were getting killed. I enlisted, and he went over there and fought and was a hero." But that was who was to a large extent fighting that war. And that's what's so, to me, so offensive about this president and the way he's treated all the things we just talked about.
You know, the Burns documentary has been extraordinary. We're working our way through it. But the other point to yours is that the notion that because you go to college, you got an exemption seems, you know, in this moment of, class warfare and inequality that, talk about reinforcing a stereotype or making a certain class of Americans fight this war. Why? I don't even understand the rationale for it.
Well, they didn't have a voice. Are these people the ones that are going to raise money or run against you?
No, I understand it. But the idea that, if you're eligible for college, you get out of serving your country just seems...
Well, to keep them alive. They're the smart ones.
Yeah, I mean, it's just ridiculous.
It is ridiculous.
As you think about it in the past, But I think the other thing going back to Trump is, it's like the old line about the longer a boxer's nickname was, the worse a fighter he was. And, mm-hmm. You can tell someone's cowardice by how brave they talk.
Right.
And, for all of his bullying and all his stuff, he's a coward. He wants to sleep in his own bed. He's afraid to be away from his footsie pajamas. Yeah. He wouldn't, travel.
The pajamas can be really comfortable.
They can be comfortable, but he's, he likes to talk tough and put down other people's courage. And that says a lot about his own insecurity.
Well, it's another aspect of stolen valor when you don't serve.
That's right.
And you talk like you know something about what they went through. It's 7:50. We'll come back and talk more about where the investigation is. Prosecutor Brady, I'll need your help on that. But let's get Mary Vandeville back for traffic first on 720 WGN. Back with Pat and Eric Edelstein and Pat Brady. And in the few minutes we have left, we simply need to solve all the other problems in the world. Where are we with the investigation into Russia and the Trump campaign and the Trump presidency?
Big week on the investigation. We saw the indictments last week. Apparently now General Flynn is a cooperator, or at least that's the rumor, and his son, who I guess was in legal jeopardy. But to me, the big development was they've identified 9 people from that were involved in some way in the administration, or excuse me, the campaign, that had contacts with Russians. And so the pace has picked up, and I always thought it was going to take longer because I thought it was going to be a very complicated financial crimes type of case. We're going to have to get a bunch of bank records and things, but now it appears to be it's going to be emails and testimony. At least that's what we know today of people that who knew what when and who talked to whom. And
so, how long do you think it'll? I mean, I know you're just predicting, but how long do you think it takes the whole thing?
The whole thing?
Yeah.
Well, the case they've already indicted is not going to go to trial till at least April, and that won't happen. It won't go till the summer, so that'll keep going. But I would imagine that if they have Flynn as a cooperator, they've only been at it 7 or 8 weeks. I would think if there's going to be a big indictment, it'll probably be in the spring.
That's the criminal side.
Right.
It doesn't mean the political side wouldn't go faster if circumstances push it that way.
Yeah, I'm not sure if there's stomach on either side for pushing him out. It didn't work very well for us in the 90s when we pushed Clinton out. He got pushed out and he had a 65% approval rating
right.
when he was impeached.
Well, and there's a big debate now. And Democrats, shockingly, we're split again. Tom Steyer, who's a billionaire progressive, spends a lot of money on environmental causes, is running ads. Some people have probably
seen him all the time, yeah.
Calling for the impeachment, and there's a real split among Democrats on this notion. Is that, do we want to just be for getting this guy out of office, or do we want to be putting forth a, you know, a proactive agenda? So
the question I keep hearing from people on the inside is that this could come down to Trump did nothing criminal. He's just not very bright, and he hired and surrounded himself with people who saw their moment to take advantage of the situation. That's all well and good. But it doesn't count for the fact that Michael Flynn's criminal behavior goes back a long way. Manafort's does as well. And Trump was refusing to talk about Russia long before he surrounded himself with the other alleged criminals and dark characters that ended up being surrounded by him. So I would be stunned to find out there's nothing related to Russia that he hasn't been trying to cover up. It just makes no sense.
Well, here, look at it this way. If he's going to be charged, if, it'd be a conspiracy. And a conspiracy is basically agreement with another person to do something illegal. And that doesn't require that you know everything that everybody else is doing or the other co-conspirators are doing. It's just an agreement to do something illegal. Given what he did with Comey and firing the FBI director, then going on Lester Holt and saying, I did it because I wanted to slow the investigation down, which to me is pretty much a clear case of obstruction. I don't think it's beyond him. Just knowing what we've seen, they go, yeah, okay, we can get some dirt on Hillary from the Russians, not realizing sure. that might be a conspiracy against the United States.
He didn't see that Schoolhouse Rock. The conspiracy one.
He has no understanding or interest in where the boundaries are, what the laws are, what's proprietary, what's allowed, what's not. I mean, we just saw this week there was a report that he didn't understand why he couldn't use the FBI and the Justice Department to go after his political enemies.
Right.
Or like you were talking about on the CNN with the antitrust at the merger, that he would actually, his administration would inject itself in there. Listen, you're long. Maybe there's good reasons for it. You're a long way from proving anything bad, but when you... The whole thing will be on a timeline. Somebody's got a timeline right now with every little email and every conversation, and they know exactly what went down and when, and that's how the case will roll out.
Tax bill, what happens?
Doesn't look good right now.
I got to believe, and you tell me, Pat, there's got to, given what happened Tuesday, a greater urgency to feel like congressional Republicans got to get something done going into the midterms.
I think there is, and this is my... partisan shot. The Democrats got to get on board a little bit. There's some things we can work with here, and if I'm politically, maybe it's good for them just to try to.
Well, Chuck Todd suggested the same thing you've said off the air to me, and I think you've said it on the air. Take whatever the number is. The math doesn't lie. Take whatever the number is that you can afford, and cut a check to every.
Ladies and gentlemen,
Dean Richards joins us from Channel 9.
Citizens of the world,
some of the world's greatest entertainers are here tonight.
Ladies and gentlemen, may I present to you?
And tonight, guess what? It's going to be Dean.
Yeah, Hollywood. You know I love you more than what I should.
Dean Richards.
Yeah, Steve Cochran.
Look at you, big shot Hollywood guy. Hey, we got a friend on the phone. Friend of yours, friend of mine?
We love her.
Aisha Tyler. Not only is she purty, she's really, really terrifically talented. So much so, shows fight over having her on.
You said that about me last week.
I didn't say we're pretty. But Aisha, really, I mean, Aisha's had a wonderful career already with much more to come, including the fact that she's now a big shot director. We'll get to that in just a second. But you know her from Criminal Minds and Archer and Who's Line and The Talk and blah, 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 Aisha, with all your success. Yeah, whatever.
Good morning.
This would be a lot funnier to you if it wasn't 6:15 a.m. in L.A.
Yes, it is 6:15 in L.A. And so if I make just kind of marginal sense, fill in the blank.
That's why we love having people on so early.
Yeah.
Vulnerable.
Yes, weak in state, limping. Yeah. One eye still stuck closed.
Right.
I'll do as best I can to be coherent.
No, we're going to make this easy for you because we're going to talk about your movie for a minute. The movie's called Axis, and I love this. I love this premise because the player, if you like show business, the player is a movie everybody can reference. But Axis, picture a big star trapped in L.A. traffic while all the demons and damage he's done in the past and the voices in his head get louder and louder. That's it, right? That's the movie?
You've synopsized it beautifully. And I think, you know, especially nowadays with everything that's going on in the world and in Hollywood, it's an especially relevant movie. In this particular guy's case, he's not a bad guy. He's a good guy. He's done some bad stuff, and he's really trying his best to be a better person. But things around him are kind of conspiring against him. And so it's a movie about a young hotshot who made a lot of money, threw it all away, and is trying to be a better person. And if a movie like that about addiction and loss and your life kind of coming down around you can be funny, then I made it as funny as I can. It's actually just kind of like dryly funny, but sure. Dark movie.
Sure.
The entire movie takes place in a car, and it's a thriller. It's very twisty. The movie changes constantly, and the response to it's been pretty awesome. So I think one of the reasons it's in this festival in Chicago, SimFest, is because SimFest kind of focuses on the nexus between music and movies, and it has an incredible soundtrack. And the entire movie was scored by the band The Silver Sun Pickups. So,
wow! SimFest is Chicago International Movies and Music Fest that starts tonight, mm-hmm. and will go through the whole weekend at the Davis Theater in Lincoln Square. And there are movies of and about. Like Aisha's movie, there's a David Bowie movie, Blind Boys from Alabama mm-hmm. movie. Go down the list. I mean, it's a huge, long list. If you love movies and if you love music in particular, this weekend is for you. So is directing Aisha something, you know, that's been a passion of yours for a while?
It has been, and it's such a long story, I won't bore you with it now, especially because it's so early in the morning that I can't quite remember how I got from bed to the phone today. But I've been wanting to do it for a while and have directed a bunch of short films, directed a bunch of music videos, including a music video for Silver Sun Pickups, which is one of the ways that we formed a relationship, and the rock band Clutch. I've done two videos for them. And I just directed an episode of Criminal Minds that aired last night. So it's definitely something I've been doing more of and want to do more of. And this was such a cool experience because, you mentioned, I'm on a bunch of shows. Last year, I only had a week off. I shot Access in 7 days, which is pretty unheard of for a feature film. And it was a pretty radical way of making a film. And it turned out incredibly well. It was a great experience. But I think that was just a function of me loving directing, really wanting to direct a feature, and just trying to find a way to do it while I was still doing The Talk and Criminal Minds and Archer and Whose Line. And I loved it. The movie turned out great. I mean, it's been getting incredible reviews. And for this tiny little independent movie that we made in 7 days to be...
Wow, how about that?
And going to all these festivals, it's been pretty exciting.
Well, listen, I know you got a bunch of other people who are not nearly as much fun to talk to, but go sell your movie, and we look forward to having you in town, and you're always welcome here.
Oh, I can't wait.
All right. See you later. That's the very sleepy Aisha Tyler talking about her movie.
That may be the best interview we've ever done with anyone who is still sleeping.
She was a trooper, man. She was a trooper. She'd been dealing with late night stuff, early morning stuff.
Been super busy. She's actually not going to be in town for this, but the movie itself is premiering tonight at...
Have you seen it yet?
At the SimFest. I have not seen it yet.
Okay.
But it's going to be at the Davis Theater on Lincoln Avenue. 7 o'clock is when it premieres tonight. And if you check out the SimFest website, you can see all the other movies that are being shown now through Sunday. So there's a lot of great stuff going on. And Steve, I just want to point out that I was also sleeping while I said all that.
Yes, I know that. Yeah, but that's the story of most of the cast of the Channel 9 Morning News. I don't know what your secret is, but I think that's part of it. At 8:20, we'll take a break here for traffic, and we come back. How do you go from a Hollywood A-lister to literally the guy who will never work in this town again? Unbelievable Kevin Spacey developments continue.
Actually being erased from a movie.
It's incredible.
It's never happened before.
All right, so Neil, come back with that story. First, here's Mary.
You'll be calling his name. Oh, 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 oh. Dean Richards, the entertainer.
Back to Dean Richards at Channel 9. Kevin Spacey has been erased from a movie that had Oscar buzz and is scheduled to be released in 7 weeks. Tell that story.
Unprecedented. He co-starred in a film with Mark Wahlberg and Michelle Williams about the kidnapping of the grandson of famed millionaire J. Paul Getty. Kevin Spacey played the role of J. Paul Getty in this movie, but because of the mounting allegations of sexual abuse and harassment now surrounding Spacey, they decided to take him out of the movie completely. They are reshooting his parts with actor Christopher Plummer. This has never been done before.
Yeah, and
where they completely erase somebody out of a movie like that.
And it's not as easy as just one guy and a crew. You got to get the crew. You got to get the guy, the new guy. You got to get everybody's schedules who have changed. You got to get the locations. You got to spend a lot of money in a very short order to make sure that Kevin Spacey, who's now a pariah, doesn't appear in your film.
In addition to just, you know, taking Spacey out. You know, it's the background players that, you know, everyone has to be brought back. They have to try to recreate the exact conditions.
I can't get my family together for dinner. I don't know how you get everybody together for this.
And the movie is scheduled to be released on December 22nd.
It's crazy.
So it's Ridley Scott made the decision to do this. He's the director, and they think they can get it done. In the meantime, there's been a new allegation now against Kevin Spacey, a former television news anchor in Boston, came forward and said that 2 years ago her son was assaulted by Kevin Spacey in a bar that Kevin Spacey bought drinks for the son, who was 18 years old at the time, who said he was 18 years old at the time. He was told Spacey that he was 21. He was actually 18. Spacey, according to the allegations, bought him drink after drink after drink until he was drunk, and then assaulted him. So that's the latest allegation on Spacey. But get this now. We also have allegations by Jeffrey Tambor's former assistant on the TV series Transparent that he made inappropriate advances toward the assistant.
Wow.
Spacey has said nothing about any of this. Tambor yesterday.
And importantly, Spacey hasn't denied any of the...
Hasn't denied anything either. The only comment that he's made is that he forgot one of the allegations. He said he never met the person and didn't remember it. But Jeffrey Tambor is emphatically saying that it's not true and that the former employee is a disgruntled former employee. So that's out there. Also making emphatic denials, Charlie Sheen, who it was the subject of allegations yesterday in the National Enquirer, that when the movie Lucas was made here in the Chicago area back in the mid-80s, that the then 13-year-old Corey Haim was raped by Charlie Sheen.
Good Lord.
Sheen says never happened, but It's a pretty involved story that friends of Corey Haim claim that Corey Haim told them, and they are now coming forward with this story, that Charlie Sheen and Corey Haim smoked pot together. They had sex, and then when Corey Haim approached Charlie Sheen later to do it again, he didn't want any part of him. And then years later, they did have sex again together. So it is a tangled story, drug-filled story, it sounds like. But regardless, allegations were made. They need to be taken seriously. Charlie Sheen is denying it. Corey Haim died in 2012, as you may remember, of pneumonia. Charlie Sheen currently is living with HIV.
Where did the allegations come from?
They came from a former actor who was friends with Corey Haim, corroborated by other friends of Corey
times.
Haim.
Yeah. Yep. Terry Crews, who you may or may not be able to connect the face and the name, but a very busy actor. He's had a couple series. He's not on anything currently, is he?
Isn't he on the Andy Samberg?
You're right.
Brooklyn Nine-Nine.
Yeah.
Right now, when he was on.
But he's also been accused of this.
He was the father on Everybody Hates Chris. He was one of the Old Spice guys,
right?
In the commercials, he's making claims that he was sexually harassed by former agents. And yesterday he filed charges against the former agent, saying that they're all saying that they feel emboldened by the Harvey Weinstein allegations That's why people are, you know, literally coming out of the woodwork right now to, you know, air their what they've been holding in for quite a long time.
How about some good news? Lin-Manuel Miranda going to do more Hamilton?
Yeah. If you want to see the original, well, the originator, the writer of Hamilton, the original star of the show, you can see him. He's going to be going back to the role, but in Puerto Rico, January of 2019. You busy then, Steve? Check your calendar.
I'll be there.
January of 2019, University of Puerto Rico's theater, which was damaged in Hurricane Maria. They're going to rebuild it, and Lin-Manuel said that he hopes this is a great way of saying that Puerto Rico is alive and rebuilding and is coming back to its former self.
And lastly, and we don't have much time here, but the CMA Awards were great. It's always the best award show. You want me to take you out with a little Brothers Osborne?
Sure.
Give me a little Brothers Osborne here, and I will talk to you tomorrow about movies and other stuff.
Garth Brooks was named Entertainer of the Year again, by the way.
Yeah. Well, good. He needs someone, another Yeehaw. Award to fill out the rack.
Two words, Steve. Yeehaw.
Yeehaw! Love this song. Hit it. Dean was sponsored by... Well, he's sponsored by me. You know these guys, Dave?
I do. Yes.
It ain't my fault. No, it's a song.
No, I know. I know. Great song.
Put the red in redneck. 8:33, big story at X at 720 WGN. Not a wrong job done, but it
ain't my fault. Let's go.
3, 2, 1.
The Steve Cochran Show presents Breakfast with the Blackhawk, sponsored by MB Financial Bank. MB means business.
Breakfast for the Blackhawk. We'll have a listener question in just a second, but the mom trip is on, and Nick Schmaltz and his mom, Lisa.
You mean the mom trip?
The mom trip, as Coach Q called it. Let's go to Nick first. Morning, Nick. How are you?
Good. How are you?
Nice to have you along. What's it like having mom on the road with you?
Yeah, it's pretty fun. You know, it's her. Haven't really gone on a trip with her in a while, and it's cool that she gets to see what goes on the road trip and having her along and being able to meet the other players and moms is pretty cool. So hopefully we have a good trip and enjoy this one.
And does she advise, you know, she have tips for you? Like, you know, hey, you got to skate faster. You got to be in this spot. I don't like this look of your shot. Is she helping you out?
No, she stays pretty quiet. I don't know. We don't really talk much hockey. I'm enjoying the trip and enjoying her company.
She's just a cheerleader, which is great. Let's meet Lisa. Lisa Schmaltz joins us now. Lisa, welcome.
Hi, thank you.
Thanks for being on. You got a whole family of athletes. Your daughter plays volleyball. Where, at Kentucky?
At Kentucky, yep.
And your son, Jordan, terrific hockey player as well?
Yep. Yeah, it's been fun.
So this is an opportunity for you to see Nick on the road and see what he's really up to.
Yes. So it's yeah, it's a fun opportunity, and I'm just happy that you know, they put on this trip, and it's unbelievable.
I know it just sort of started, but have you had a chance to meet most of the other moms?
Yeah, last night we had a dinner, and then, you know, hung out for a while after that, so it's been fun.
Who would you say you could pal around with? Like, which of the other moms did you really enjoy?
Well, last night at our table, it was Ryan Hartman's mom,
okay,
and John Hayden, so we were kind of hanging out.
All right, Nick, of those two dudes, who do you want your mom to be friends with more?
Probably both of them. Those are probably my two guys I hang out with the most.
There you go. There you go.
Worked out perfect.
I tell you, the Blackhawks don't miss a trick. I'm sure they're taking care of you first class. but they know the guys and who the guys hang with, and they want you to meet their moms. I'm sure that's why they sat you together.
Yeah, no, we actually chose our seats that night.
Yeah, there you go. There you go. So, Lisa, do you know what the agenda is? What are you guys going to do for fun?
Well, today we are going on a bus tour of Philadelphia this afternoon, so that should be fun. Get to see all the sites. And then tomorrow in Raleigh, it's another tour as well, the city and lunch. And
yeah, it's a historic city as well. Yeah. Your favorite hockey memory so far of Nick, who's just at the beginning here, but I mean, what's your favorite hockey memory? That when you brag about Nick, what's the story you like to tell?
Oh gosh, there's so many of just Blackhawks or the
whenever, you know, the Green Bay Gamblers, wherever he was.
I think, well, two things. One, and they both involve the national championship, and the first one was the semifinal game when he scored that game-winning goal to get him into the championship. And then
this is at North Dakota.
Yeah, North Dakota. And then them winning the national championship was just unbelievable. And it was such a great experience. I'll never forget that.
Well, that's sweet. It's a good story. Dave, say hi to Lisa.
Lisa, good morning. So, and maybe hi. Nick could chime in on this too. How are you? And when you're in the stands, are you a parent who can sit there quietly and sort of reserved, and if there's a call that you don't necessarily agree with, you're kind of quiet, or do you get up, do you yell and scream and yell at the refs?
Oh, no, I'm quiet. No, I wouldn't say anything. Inside I might be, but I'll never say it.
All right, how about when he was a little guy, though?
No.
No?
I think I've been pretty quiet, yeah.
Nick, Coach Q's on with me every week here on the show, and would you be cool if Lisa went up to Coach Q on the trip and said, I think Nick needs some more minutes?
Probably not, no.
Probably wouldn't be helpful, would it, Nick?
No.
Well, Lisa, it's great to meet you. Stand by for a second. Nick, let's talk a little bit about the team. What do you guys need to do to get going to score more?
I don't know. I think we're creating a lot of chances. Pucks aren't just going in. I think we got to get to the net a little bit more, find a few dirty goals and get more traffic, get second chances. And I think if we get a few of those, then, plays will start opening up. And I think maybe we get one big game where we kind of break out, and then we'll go from there.
That's what I think. That 10-1, I remember I was worried the night you guys opened it was 10-1. I said, save some of these. We could use them now, Dave. Right.
And Nick had a huge game on opening night, couple of goals and an assist, and those have been a little fewer since then. So what do the coaches say to you, Nick, when you're having trouble finding the net? And it's not just you. I mean, it's been pretty much team-wide. How do they tell you and kind of keep your spirits up?
I don't know. I think we talk about holding on to the puck more, spending more time with the puck. I think we got there's a lot of plays to be made out there where we're just kind of throwing it away and not holding on to it. And, we got a lot of skill on this team. So I think the more we have the puck, the more opportunities we're going to get. So just that comfortability level of not being afraid to make a play. I think we can work on that a little bit more, and I think our skill will take over if we kind of settle down a little bit.
Couple of changes in the lines tonight with Sharp and Kane and Taves on the top line. So you're like the middle guy in terms of age on your line at age 21, because you have that old guy Ryan Hartman and then Alex DeBrincat,
the punk kid.
Yeah, the kid. So is he kind of look up to you now as one of the veterans? Did he seek any kind of counsel?
Nick Schmaltz, crusty vet.
Yeah.
Maybe a little bit. I mean, I know it's hard. He's so young and coming into the league with all these established veterans, and we try to hang out with him on the road and at home too. We try to include him in everything just so he's not sitting by himself at his apartment or whatever. But we all get along pretty well, and he's a good kid, so it's fun having him, and he's been a great player for us so far.
Well, we got a question from a listener in the MB Financial Bank Breakfast with the Blackhawk. And Lisa, you may be able to chime in on this. Nick, do you have any non-hockey related hobbies that you love?
I love playing Xbox. The new Call of Duty just came out. So.
Oh, yeah. Mom, are you good at Call of Duty? Did Lisa hang up on us? We got a phone line, bro. Well, listen, Nick, thank you for doing this. And when you see Jay Blunk's mom, give her a hug from the show here. But you guys have a great time on the road. And Lisa, thank you as well.
Awesome. Thanks.
All right. You guys be well. Hold the line. Hold on one second here. Stand by while I turn everything off. I don't know what happened. I think Lisa may have had a better offer.
It's possible. Yeah. She's hanging out with Ryan Hartman's mom and John Hayden's mom. By the way, the Blackhawks chairman, Rocky Wirtz, mm-hmm. present CEO John McDonough, and Mayor Emanuel are going to tour the new MB Ice Arena Chicago Blackhawks community rink this morning.
Oh, good.
And check that out.
Yeah. Do you think at any point Lisa was looking at Nick and making that clap, clap, clap thing with her hand? Like, hey, if this guy ever stops yapping, we can get on with our day.
Yeah, but was that directed at you or me?
I think it was me, yeah. MB Financial Bank, thank you for Breakfast with a Blackhawk.
Live from the Allstate Showcase Studio, this is the Steve Cochran Show on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
We have several veterans-related things tomorrow on the program, but we've been trying each hour, or each 9 o'clock hour, I should say, with our friends at CLTV to introduce you to important causes, veterans organizations, vets themselves. We continue that today with the fine people at the Midwest Veterans Closet. A bunch of folks here in studio, some you've met before. Mary Carmody is the co-founder, right?
Yes, I am.
And when did you co-found?
We co-founded in 2014 in a landscape trailer.
You've gotten off to a nice start in just a couple of years.
We have. We're currently serving 400-plus active military and veterans a month.
Why don't you introduce who else is in studio?
So with me also is Carrie Price and Dr. Susie Schulman.
And who do I thank for these beautiful – I'll hold them up for TV. Who do I thank for these beautiful socks?
Actually, an anonymous donor.
Oh, is that right?
Yes. Who couldn't sell them because of some licensing, you know, stuff like that.
Okay.
And so was able to talk them into donating them.
The most patriotic feat in America.
Yes. Aren't they great?
Right. Carrie, what do you do to help the organization?
Well, I'm a assistant manager of the Veterans Closet, and I assist them mm-hmm. with clothing, help with furniture and apartments, and help get jobs and help get transportation back and forth to work.
Do you guys find that when vets come to you that that sort of thing helps relieve some of the pressure just to have someone like you be able to say, we're going to help you figure out what the furniture is, and we're going to help figure out how to get a coat for winter and all that?
Yes.
So absolutely.
Well, kind of a life consultant, huh?
Right, because they can't believe that they can get this kind of help anywhere.
Right.
So often we see them in tears just for a few things.
So as founder director of this, what inspired you to start this, and was this the original idea? I mean, most times you start something and it grows into something that maybe you didn't see.
Right. So this was never a dream. But my parents are immigrants,
mm-hmm.
and they escaped during the war.
Mm-hmm. And by the way, it's okay to cry on the show, so don't be too tough.
When my mom saw the Statue of Liberty,
uh-huh.
she said she knew she was free.
Well, that's a great story.
And so I feel it's my duty now.
I never thought
about doing this, but it just happened. It took a life of its own, and so many volunteers help out.
And you're meeting great friends along the way.
Great friends. And furry friends.
Well, it's a beautiful legacy for your mom.
It is.
You should be proud of that.
I am very proud.
Yeah, as you should. Let me talk to you, Susie, for a second, because rescuing dogs is a big part of your life now, right?
Yes, it is.
And look, get your mic on there. Okay. And therapy dogs are a big part of the therapy for veterans.
Yes. Many veterans have service dogs, they have therapy dogs, and they have comfort dogs. And the dogs are really lifesavers for these veterans. They're able to really function in the world because of the dogs.
How are we doing on supplying dogs to these vets? I know that's different programs that do it, but are we? Do we have a lot of vets who could use dogs and the dogs aren't in the pipeline?
Lots of veterans are on waiting lists for dogs. There are some service organizations that are dedicated specifically. In Chicago, there's one called War Dogs.
Okay.
And it's very expensive to provide one service dog for one veteran. It can be $35,000.
Is that right?
With all the training, yep.
Can you rescue a dog to do this, or do they have to a specific breed better at it?
No, you can rescue a dog, too. In fact, most of the service dogs are rescue dogs.
Oh, that's cool.
So it's like a two-for-one. It's great.
You, and we talked to you about this, Mary. You're going to bring some dogs in next time you come in.
Yes, we're going to bring all our ambassadors, if it's okay.
Without a doubt. Carrie, the canine coat drive, are you going to have the coats where? Where?
It's going to be on our parking lot.
So they can bring the coats, jackets, sweaters. What else? What else are you collecting?
Leashes.
Leashes for dogs.
Leashes.
Oh, that's a good idea.
Coats, socks.
Booties.
Booties. Hats,
harnesses.
Gloves, harnesses, everything that they have. That
cats. No, cats.
Everything that a dog could use.
Right, everything a cat or everything a dog would love. Serving all those who serve. So they go to the Midwest Veterans Closet right on Green Bay Road then,
yes,
right?
2323 Green Bay Road.
All right, good. Mary, what else do we need to know?
So you need to know that we need coats, we need accessories, and they can be brought to the Midwest Veterans Closet. They can be shipped. They can be mailed. They're a great community service hours for children. In fact, a lot of the schools are organizing drives.
Well, that's nice, huh?
And yeah, it's great because it's something that's not really affordable for a lot of the active military and veterans. And so along with supplying food for them, and treats, we will now be able to give them a jacket.
And Susie, do you rescue a particular kind of dog? I mean, have you done this for the past couple of years? Do you see a dog where you think this is a good recruit?
I actually rescue dogs that come from the South because the South has a huge homeless pet overpopulation problem.
Right.
But that's a whole other story.
But yeah, you have a soft heart then for all critters, big and small. But is there a specific dog? Like, sometimes you can look, Dave, you know this, mm-hmm. You can look at a teenager and you go, that kid's an athlete, that kid may be a pro someday, right? Can you look at a dog and go, this dog seems to have the temperament for this?
I think you can. I think that, any breed makes a great service dog, therapy dog, comfort dog mm-hmm. for a veteran or for anybody else, really, for that matter. Temperament is important. Size doesn't matter. They can be big, small, medium.
Yeah, by the way, did I make it clear the jackets, the sweaters, the booties are for the dogs?
Mm-hmm. Right.
Right.
Well, you mentioned the leash. That's usually the...
Yeah, but I don't know if people are going to bring by their own coats. Well, you could use those.
But we also have those. In fact, every police department hosted by the Lake County Sheriff's Office is hosting a coat drive for us. And we have hundreds of coats to give. Hundreds of coats.
You should... it's a pretty amazing thing to do in 3 years. Not even 3 years.
Right.
You must do this nonstop.
Nonstop.
Well, good for you.
Nonstop.
Is there any idea how many service dogs? You mentioned there's a waiting list. How many service dogs are out there now with veterans and how many you're looking to outfit through this drive?
Actually, I don't really know an exact
But there's
number.
A lot, right? I
mean, here's a lot. The thing. So many of the veterans have service dogs or therapy dogs. Service dog, there's a distinction between the three.
What's the difference between a service dog and a therapy dog?
A service dog it comes from an actual service dog organization and has gone through a whole, slew of training.
Okay.
It's kind of the professional dog in the group. And a therapy dog is usually certified by various organizations. And those dogs have to pass a temperament test, an obedience test, and some other tests. So they're also kind of semi-professional.
So do therapy dogs become service dogs?
No. It's a category.
It's a different category.
It's a category unto
itself. It's AAA versus the big leagues, okay?
Yeah, that's
correct.
It.
Right.
And then the comfort dogs are any dog really that you have that provides comfort to you, and you need a prescription from a physician or a therapist to have a comfort dog.
You can make a huge impact, and I know Mary, you're always looking for other creative ideas too. I assume you need mm-hmm. more volunteers.
We need volunteers every day. We need money. We need to expand our location so we can expand our services.
Do you have room to expand where you are?
Oh, yeah. We're using 2,000 square feet of 20,000 square feet.
Okay, so we really want handymen who could work and expand this?
Well, some handymen that can write a check with a lot of zeros on it.
Well, that's not a handyman. That's the boss. That's the company. But that would be great. And, Carrie, if people want to come out and buy this stuff, where do they?
We don't sell anything. Everything is
free. Oh, this all goes away. Okay, I thought you were raising money for that as well.
Everything is free. All of the goods that you donate.
Yeah, okay.
Are free.
I get smarter with every time you're here, trust me.
I can see that.
thought you could. Old computers, too, right?
We'll old take computers. Not too old.
No, but stuff
yes,
that's usable.
Everyone needs a computer.
Yeah, you're not. It's not a place for a rummage sale, kids.
Right.
Helpful donations. They've got plenty to do. And you'd also like to connect more vets with jobs, I'm sure.
Absolutely. We've connected quite a few, and whose life has changed. Lives have changed, and some of them were homeless living in a tent just a year ago.
Well, I'm going to say something to you that I never say. Thanks for the socks.
Oh.
And thanks to all three of you. Carrie, thanks for jumping in
the
last minute.
Thank you for having us. Thank you for having us. We're really excited to be here.
May I add one quick thing?
Of course.
I just wanted your listeners to know that for our veterans that have the dogs, as I said in the beginning, they are truly lifesavers, whatever category, the service dog, the therapy dog, the comfort dog. And it's very expensive to own a dog. And so, you know, oftentimes they don't have enough left over after the basics have been covered.
Sure.
Like vetting and food, and then sometimes even the basics are a struggle. And so we started the coat drive this year because we felt that their dog should, you know, share in the warmth this winter. We have really
cold
temperatures in Chicago. So just wanted your listeners to know that.
I'm glad you did.
Will you take food for the dogs too?
Oh, yes.
Oh, sure.
Yes. Okay. Yes. We've had 100, just last month we had 100 new military use our food and nutrition resource center.
Wow. Great. Tremendous. Yep. Just a few blocks north of the James A. Lovell Federal Healthcare Center and just west of the Naval Station at Great Lakes. Just keep up the great work.
Thank you.
God bless
you. Come
you
by anytime.
Thank you.
2323 Green Bay Road. And, of course, the website is MidwestVeteransCloset.org. Happy Veterans Day. 922. More in a moment coming up on CLTV and 720 WGN. Walter Jacobson's Perspective. You can find it anytime at WGN Plus. And as always, it's sponsored by HearingHealthCenter.com. Before we go any further, I want to say hi and thank you to June Schroeder from Aurora. Speaking of good things, June wrote me an actual letter. Look at this, kids. This is what we refer to as a letter. This is an actual typed letter.
I got one of those this week, too.
It's crazy.
I was really not sure how to...
You know, what do you do? To open it? What do you do after you have it in your hands?
It's not that fake font, is it?
No. It's real. It's real in all ways.
I got
ways.
A thank you note in the fake font. I told you that, right?
Oh, yeah. And by the way, congratulations again on your 20th anniversary that we missed.
Oh, thank you.
We missed Andrea's 20th. We missed Mary's 20th. Apparently, we missed yours.
I missed my 20th and my 33rd.
Yeah.
I have two.
I look forward to missing your 34th.
Thank you. I'm looking forward to having one.
Where's my cake?
We have donuts down here.
Oh, really?
Yeah, Sandberg, come in here and tell me who we thank for the donuts while we're at this. Anyway, June writes, I'm ready to tell you about a group called Celebrate Differences, located in Oswego, Illinois. It's a not-for-profit, and our 23-year-old autistic grandson, Alex Kotas, I believe, K-O-T-A-S, participates in many of their programs. He volunteers each week at A Pinch of Happiness. It's a spice shop located in Oswego that is staffed by special needs individuals, and their website is pinchofhappiness.com. But it's Rebecca Christensen that works with these young folks at the spice shop, and we thank Rebecca for her work. But Celebrate Differences, this is right from their website, Celebrate Differences is committed to creating a place for families of children with disabilities to feel part of a larger accepting community. Realizing parents experience a feeling of being overwhelmed, emotions, worries, questions, and we want families to know there's hope and resources available. So again, it's called Celebrate Differences, and A Pinch of Happiness is one of the folks that helps the program do the fine work they're doing. And I'll get to the website for Celebrate Happiness here in just a second as well. The donuts, who are we thanking people?
Go Glazed. They are celebrating Thirsty Thursday, so they gave us donuts for Rosé all day. They're in the shape of a wine bottle, so Dave would like them.
They're
okay,
pink.
That's you they're, were too. So don't,
I know.
Don't lay that on me.
They're the cutest donuts ever. So there's a picture on our social media if you want to see it. But you should. Everyone should enjoy them.
Is there a Chardonnay?
Nope, there's just rosé right now, Mayor. Oh. But I think you'll like it. Also, you talked about a letter. I got a handwritten letter from a listener. Her name is Angie Burke.
Okay.
And because I complained on the air one day that the people in my house don't return the tape, the scissors, and the writing utensils to the correct drawer.
Right.
So she said she had the same problem in her house with her sons. And so she bought duplicates and then kept the duplicates in her lingerie drawer. So that way, she could, if she needed tape, scissors, or any writing utensils, she'd go to her lingerie drawer, use them, and then put them back herself. So she always knew where her stuff is. So I like
that.
So
she knew that nobody would be taking her stuff out of her bras and panties drawer.
Yes, and so yeah. I think that's a great idea, and I'm going to implement it at the Boyle household.
It's a good idea. Mm-hmm. Wouldn't stop Hochberg, but that's a good idea.
Yeah.
It's 9:28. All right, I think we're caught up. And again, thanks to June, not just for listening, but good luck to Alex. Alex, he sounds like a great kid. It's 9:29, actually. We're back with a big story next on 720 WGN.
The Steve Cochran Show.
Credit cards company's like, okay, you want to play with us? We'll play with you. Okay, the minimum payment now goes from 2% minimum payment to 4%.
Seems pretty upset.
Okay, so now you got a person that's barely hanging on. $20,000 to $30,000 with credit card debt at 2% is $400 to $600, right? It's manageable.
It's so angry.
Now you just, what do these morons do? They turn it into $800 to $1,200 a month. Who the hell can afford that?
Stop yelling at me!
So what do they have to do? They have to go out and take out another credit card to pay the credit cards off.
I promise you, I don't look for his fuse and light it. I really don't.
Take it easy, champ.
Maybe sit the next couple plays out. You know what I mean?
Well, that escalated quickly. David Hochberg's here. Ross Cochran's here. Pearl Mortgage has invaded the studio. Good morning, David. Well, I get your mic on. Let me try that again. Good morning, David.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. It's great to be here.
Nice to see you. So this new tax bill.
Yeah.
Speaking of lighting your fuse.
Sure.
This new tax bill includes an inability going forward, in one version, to deduct student loans with a bubble of $1.5 trillion or whatever the number is in student loan debt in this country.
Getting close to that number.
If we now make it impossible for families to take a tax deduction, it makes it less likely they'll have the money to pay the loans back.
Mm-hmm. Correct.
This political win is costing more and more money every day.
Yeah. And the CBO said it's going to increase the deficit by $1.5 trillion. Was that what it is?
It's $1.3.
$1.3? You know.
What's $200 billion among friends?
Oh, it's $200 billion among friends. I'm getting a ton of these calls. You know, should I refinance my loan now? And get it under 500 before I lose my tax break. No, you shouldn't do that. Number one, you don't know what the final rule is going to be. And once you find out what the final rule is going to be, there's going to be plenty of time to react. Because I've got a friend of mine around the corner. We refinanced his home. He's got a $630,000 mortgage. And he's like, I'm thinking about bringing in $130,000 to pay my loan down so I don't lose my tax deduction. I'm like, you're grandfathered in there, Spartacus. Plus, I've got you into 3.5% and I can't get you a better rate. So what are you doing?
What are you doing?
I'm like, yeah, so just calm down.
Go stress out about something else.
Right. You know, I listen to the station all the time and I hear all these experts on here. I'm just like, you know, let's freak out. Okay. The bottom line is this. If they do anything, the people in the million-dollar homes, okay, because I talked to my accountant on the way down last night. I'm like, how's this going to impact people? He's like, it's just on new loans over, you know, mortgages over $500,000. You're going to lose the tax deductions. And he's like, a lot of my clients that are in the upper.
That's if the bill passes.
If the bill passes.
Yes.
If it's enacted into law. And it's a long way to go before anything's enacted into law. And after what happened in Virginia, it's got a longer way to go to be enacted into law earlier this week. Okay. So he's like, what people don't realize is, and I'm not a CPA, I don't play one on TV, and I don't even pretend to be one. He said most people in those homes that are carrying those mortgages are making making seven-digit incomes or making million-dollar-a-year incomes. And once you cross over a certain income level, you lose the tax deduction on interest and a bunch of other things anyway. Mm-hmm. And those are the type of people with the income you need to carry those big of a houses. The challenge that you have here is that I'm from Northbrook, Okay, my home, you know, would appraise out somewhere in the eights. If you put it in Frankfurt, it'll appraise out in the threes. Okay, just because it's in Northbrook. It's a single family, 3,200 square foot home. Nothing really special.
But it's a nice house.
It's a very nice house, modest house.
Isn't that the house where you were mowing the lawn with the headphones on? I was mowing. The neighbor tackled you and broke your ribs?
No, that was down in Kentucky. That was my summer home in Kentucky. Yeah.
But your point would be?
My point will be that there are a lot of people, like in Naperville, that are buying $600,000 homes, that it's dual incomes, making maybe combined income $125,000 to $150,000 a year because the husband and the wife each make $75,000 to $80,000 a year. It's not a lot of money in this area. You might think $160,000 a year in this area. You have two kids, three kids, two cars. Johnny's in travel hockey. Sally's in travel soccer and all the activities. It's a lot of money. That's why everybody's carrying $20,000 to $30,000 with credit card debt. So it's not the millionaires that everybody's like, oh, you know, it's all the millionaires. No, it's people around here in DuPage, in Will, in Cook County that are buying homes. These aren't super ultra wealthy people. These are everybody you sit next to on the train on the way home. Okay, these are people that you're at Denny's with having your
Grand Slam.
Yeah, your Grand Slam breakfast. You know, these aren't ultra wealthy people. So it's something to keep aware of that, I wouldn't worry so much about it now because it's still in the
talk phase.
It's still in the talk phase and everything else. But, Durbin's been on here enough. Senator Durbin, he's obviously against it. So it's not so much we have to worry about our representatives voting for it, maybe a Roskam out west or something like that. But it's gonna be tough to pass through the Senate, and we'll see what the final bill is. We'll see what.
What about the idea that if this goes this way, the volume of houses available will go away even more?
I don't believe that.
Builder supply, not the business.
Right.
Builder supply, actual supply of built homes.
Right.
Wow, I'm having trouble speaking professionally.
The amount of homes that have been built in
that'd
the last
be the
5 years.
I'm looking for. does that impact you?
Well, sure it does. It impacts us because we have four or five people bidding on the same homes. Because if you look back at 07, 08, what happened? Everything stopped. And a ton of builders went out of business between 07 and 2012, 2013. Nothing got built. And there was a ton of inventory overhanging the market. All that inventory has been absorbed basically now. And you have a shortage of new inventory. I drove out to St. Charles. I was out at Cal's Angels on Tuesday night, and I drove through Bartlett. Holy smokes, there's building going on out there.
Great.
I couldn't believe it. So a lot of building is starting to happen, but we've got people that are on their fourth or fifth house, even with the Team Hochberg loan approval, that people are overbidding them. The house is on the market for three. It sells for $335. They were only willing to go up to $325. So there's still a shortage of inventory out there. There's still a need for housing. I don't think it's going to be Armageddon where I hear all these experts and, oh, all the home builders will go out. That's crap. People, home ownership is still important. And you know what? Home ownership will continue because the rents will continue to rise and there'll be a yin and a yang and a push and a pull and people will still want to buy homes and still have a place for their own. They're not just going to rent all the time. So all
the
of this
sky isn't falling yet. Yeah,
you know, there's not blood running down Michigan Avenue.
Right.
For the love of
right.
God, stop scaring the crap out of everybody.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Well, stop yelling at me.
I'm just talking loudly.
All right. So when we come back, what topic would you like to tackle?
Well, Veterans Day is this week, and also our charitable arm. I talked about it on Bill and Wendy yesterday. We were supposed to give out a car today, but through the Associated Firefighters of Illinois.
Uh-huh.
But that got pushed back to Christmas time. So that's why I'm here 2 days in a row. I apologize, but we're supposed to be giving a car out.
Well, but we'll talk tomorrow about more Veterans
Day. But I want to talk after the break about Cal's Angels and how your listeners can get involved in helping me help out families that are experiencing pediatric cancer. A member of the family is a child is going through pediatric cancer, and how it impacts the whole family and how your listeners and everybody else can help out. We're doing a ton of charity work for them, and we'll love your support.
Cal's is great.
Yep.
9:51. We're back after this on 720 WGN. David Hochberg's here. David is one of the more generous guys I've ever known, very charitable, and gives away a lot of his own money and looks for you to help wherever you can, and you should. So I came to Cal's Angels probably around the same time you did.
Mm-hmm.
And the Sutters lost their son, Cal. I think he was 13. And as I've said to them many times, you would expect parents who go through that to run as far as they could away from the hospital where they spent so much time in the last days.
They ran right into the sun.
They ran right into it.
Right.
So explain what they do every Christmas.
What they do every Christmas, it's called 12 Days of Christmas. They get the names from doctors of families in precarious situations, and that a child is going through cancer treatment. And what happens when a child is going through cancer treatment, as you know, if you've ever had friends that had a kid with cancer, unfortunately, we have a neighbor of ours going through it right now.
Is that right?
The other kids are feel neglected,
sure,
unintentionally, because all the running back and forth to the hospital with the treatments and everything else. And obviously, there's a family unit there. So what they do is, after experiencing it themselves, they know that there's other families out there and there's other kids out there. So they go to these families and say, hey, give us a list of the gifts that you want, up to $1,000. And they have sponsors like myself and Tom Janke at Builder Supply, the Spencers at Permaseal Roy, and Laura Ann, and MegaPros Joe, just to name a few of the local sponsors here on WGN. We're adopting a family, and we're giving $1,000. And a couple of my realtors, Chuck and Kelly Dunlop and Donna Sattler, are donating $1,000. And how your listeners could help, we just got the list today. I was hoping to have the list yesterday, just got the list today. I'm talking to my IT guy with Ross after the show. We're going to get it up on the website. There'll be live reads and commercials running the next 2 weeks, how your listeners can help out. It's very simple. You're going to be able to go to WGN, David. There's going to be a logo there. All you have to do is click on the logo, and you could buy a gift, okay? And the gift that you buy, there's already a gift registry from Amazon already up there. You just go in there, click your gifts. I was on there this morning in the cab ride on the way over here. Anywhere from $5 up to $300. You could buy whatever you want.
Sure.
And if you don't want to spend, if all the lower price gifts are taken, you could buy, make a donation, because they buy Jewel gift cards or Visa gift cards for the family to go out and buy their holiday dinner.
Right.
And sometime around the 15th of December, Team Hochberg and Team Permaseal and Team MegaPro and Team Builder Supply Outlet and the realtors are going to collect the gifts from Cal's Angels, take it to the family's homes, and have a holiday event with the family there.
And having done that, Ross and I did this, I don't know how long ago, with a family with a sick little boy in Naperville. And last we checked, he's doing great.
Yeah.
He was three at the time. These miracles do happen.
Sure.
But what you were talking about is key. When a family is going through all the things they're going through, the other sibs have a tough go, too.
Right.
And this takes some of the pressure off the family. By the way, it's just one of the things they do amongst many. But thank you for doing that. It's very nice. So where do they go again?
They will be able to go, hopefully tomorrow morning, to WGN David. There'll be a logo. There'll be something Ross is pointing at something. And my Facebook page as well. Okay, thank you, Ross.
I thought they had to go to your left shoulder there for a second.
I didn't know what he was pointing at. I thought he was having a heart attack. Yeah. Are you okay? You're right? Because Bill's here to do mouth-to-mouth. He's a professional.
Yeah.
You can go to Facebook page. You go to our Twitter. You can go to every social media venue that we're going to be able to go to. There's going to be ads running on all the shows, directing people to help
us. So help wherever you can.
Help wherever you can.
You'll come back tomorrow and talk veterans?
Yes, I will.
See you then.
I'll be back Monday through Friday, too, if you'd like me.
Don't push it.
Okay.
Bill and Wendy coming up next. That's David Ockberg from Permaseal. What's the number for you?
24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 312-751-1333, 312-751-1333, WGNDavid.com. I want to make sure I get the
right
radio.
You said he's from Permaseal.
Yeah.
I did?
What? Yeah.
What'd I say?
I said you were from Permaseal.
I was from Permaseal. Well, I'm actually going to have lunch with them tomorrow, so I'm applying for a job. Well, I'm going to be installing sump pumps for Christmas.
It's like handling a hurricane. Bill and Wendy are next. They're from Permaseal.